夜に浮かんでいたクラゲのような月が果てたバス停の背を覗けばあの夏の君が頭にいる。
Hello everyone, welcome back to the episode of the Calicom Blogcast. My name is Matthew, and tonight's episode is still not our 2023 recap and 2024 prediction show. We're having to wait until next week because somebody was in Atlanta.
Hey, don't get me wrong, he's having a fun time there.
Well, I mean, it's neat. It's not like he was there for leisure or anything like that.
Oh, well, I actually don't know the details about what happened or anything like that, but he's still having a day off. He's still having a time off and pretty much vacation. Not vacationing, but more like traveling out to Atlanta.
It is a business trip for the medical center he works for.
Right, right. But nonetheless, I mean, good for him, though.
Yeah, so Jericho is not here with us tonight. He'll be with us next week for the recap podcast. And maybe he'll talk about his adventures at a Waffle House and how he may or may not was able to see a fight at 4 in the morning.
Oh, you wildin', guys! Oh! Oh! You are wildin'!
I still want to go check out the Waffle House. Apparently, there's some in SoCal, right, Ryan?
No.
Wait, are you serious? I thought one of you guys told me that you guys went to Waffle House.
Me and Johnny have been to Waffle Houses, but the last time I was at a Waffle House was like 10 years ago when I was in Missouri.
Oh, shoot. Okay. I thought there was like, because I remember we mentioned it, like, I think in a previous podcast about Waffle Houses, and yeah, I just didn't recall it.
Or to the natives out there, it's Missouri, so sorry if I mispronounced it.
So it's just myself, and then I also have Nate.
Hello, how's everybody doing?
And finally, Ryan.
There's too many fucking games coming out this week and next week, and then we have Persona the following week. I don't know what to do, Matt. Nate, help me. I don't know what to do.
Just take care of it. But go for one game, Persona, okay?
So what's supposed to do the next 2 weeks?
I don't care if it's wait till Persona, then play that, and then wait for the rest of it, and then play the other games later.
but Nate, you have to understand, there's like another code that just came out today. There was The Last of Us Remake Part 2 that came out today. Next week, you have Tekken, you have Like a Dragon, you have Undernight Inbirth, and then the following week is Persona.
Yeah.
Like,
okay,
what
well,
the hell am I going to do?
I think it's more of a binge of video games now for you, Ryan.
It's not like I can afford all of it.
And don't forget about Grand Blue Fantasy Relink. That's also coming out on the same week as Persona.
Oh, damn.
But I'm already playing Versus. What Grand Blue game am I supposed to play?
I mean, the hot thing right now as we record is Pal World, aka Pokemon with guns.
Yeah.
No. Here's my thing. It does not feel like Pokemon with guns. It's okay. Has anyone seen the game Rust?
Ideally, yes.
I heard about that. Yeah.
It's Rust with Pokemon. I swear to fucking God. Like the mechanics of Power World is almost like Rust because you could build bases. You could build beds as spawn points, which is basically Rust. So. Maybe.
If we get the chance. Just do a sit down and the blog plays Power World and just we record it or we stream it.
Well, we'll take a look into that. But in the meantime, we just have like just two topics tonight to kind of keep it light. We need to really do a deep dive into what happened at CES about a couple weeks ago. And I think the big thing that did come out of that was NVIDIA coming out with the new RTX 4000 refresh, which is headlined by the RTX 4080 Super. We also have a 4070 Super. And I cannot believe I'm saying this.
This is so redundant.
We have a 4070 Ti Super.
How many more graphic card versions are we just going to grab from NVIDIA?
Well, the biggest issue is that there's one major card missing, and that's the RTX 4090 Super that was supposed to be in this refresh, but that got cut.
Just think of it this way, though. Like, I feel like just like Linus when he bought that TCL TV like 3 weeks back, and now it's out at CES right now, or CES when he went a week ago. I feel bad for anyone who just recently bought a 4080 for $1,200 just to turn around to find out that the 4080 Super for $1,000 is actually faster and better than the standard 4080, which, by the way, kind of sucks they're stopping production of the 80, but this is like a long thing that we've already talked about where they're cutting older cards in favor of the Supers. But I just feel bad. Like, if you're going to be buying if you bought a 4080 in the last, I don't know, let's say 2 months, maybe in the last week, to find out that the 80 Super is going to be better. I kind of feel like Linus. I feel bad for myself, or I feel bad that I even have it. I mean, ugh. The fact that Linus had to backdoor that TV from China just to find out that, oh, hey, it's actually coming to the States. I feel bad.
What the hell is this? It's my TV, except it's got a different model number. It comes with a stand this time. And I don't have to give my phone number to the CCP to turn it on. Come on, man.
But focusing on the 80 on the Super Series, like, I'm glad it's cheaper if we can actually find them.
They're always a hot commodity, though, whenever they bring out like a new version of these graphics cards. So I'm not surprised that they're sold out right now.
No.
They're not out yet. Well, just one.
Well, oh, sorry.
70 Super is.
Yeah, 70 Super's out. Yes, I remember. I'm seeing him right now. I mean, I'm looking at Newegg right now. I mean, they have versions of like 4070 Super cards right now.
The Super Ti is, or Ti Super is actually next week.
Okay.
And then the following week is when we see the 4080 Super.
So I'm surprised. So I'm just confused at like what they're doing here with like all the RTX versions coming out, but just four versions of RTXs or RTX 4070s out there. And then I'm trying to like compare like all the you're trying to like compare to like all of the the perks when it comes to actually these four versions of 4070, and I'm like, do we really want? I mean, one of them is fine, but do we really want to actually increase it with a Ti or a Super or a 4070 Super or 4070 Ti Super?
I can explain a little bit.
Okay.
So the RTX 4070 Ti Super is being priced at $799. And for $799, you get 8,448 CUDA cores. You can get a boost clock of 2.6 gigahertz, with a memory bus width of 256. Memory clock is about 1.3 gigahertz with a 16 gigabyte GDDR6X memory size with a TDP of 285. That is an increase over everything offered so far, including the brand new 4070 Super. All of the memory bus was on the 40 series up to that point is 192, and all of them have a 12 gigabyte memory size compared to the 16 on the Ti Super.
Yeah, that is not bad actually. If you're going for a price tag of $800 for a 4070 Ti Super, that's quite of an increase right there. I mean, I'm looking at the CUDA cores, and RTX 4070 Ti Super obviously has the most, just because it is the best version of the 4070 here.
Yeah, well, a lot of people, and I've been seeing some headlines, is that a lot of people like the 4070 Super at $600 because it's a better approved version of the 4070, and it's almost for the same price.
4070 only what like 5,000 over 5,800 CUDA cores, and then 4070 Super has 7,000 that's over 7,000 CUDA cores.
Yeah. Right now, you could buy a 4070, this is according to NVIDIA's product page, for $549. So for $50 more, you're getting a huge uplift in CUDA cores and...
Are the Supers out right now?
Just the 4070 Super. The 4070 Ti Super is out next week, and then the 4080 Super is out...
It pretty much follows suit the following week.
Okay, yeah.
So they're going week by week by week. So I'm assuming 4070 Supers are obviously sold out now, just because everybody wants to get their hands on it and see if they can get a better graphics card out of it.
They're on the market, but at mind you, always at a higher price given its Newegg, Amazon, and you have like the ETA workers. I mean, I haven't checked out I haven't been to Micro Center in God knows how long, so I can't get a proper estimate there. I mean, we can check the website. That's always
I've been looking at Newegg right now, and I'm seeing like Asus, MSI, most of their RTX 4070 Supers are around like at the lowest price $609.
Oh, that's still above
MSRP.
Yeah, same with the that's the only things I've seen, like Asus and MSI. Then there's like some other brands that I don't recognize, like Zotac Gaming, but that's $600.
Zotac is at least a semi-notable brand, so...
Okay. So that's that's like $600, which I think is like the lowest price I can see for the RTX 4070 Super. And then everything else that is lower is mostly just the 4070, which, according to what you guys are saying, isn't the best.
I mean, it's good, but the 4070 Super is better. I mean, it's quotably enough that it's actually better than my 3090 in quotations. Very high quotations at that. Mm. Steve at Gamers Nexus and also Linus at Linus Tech Tips have both covered how it's supposedly better. Actually, Jay has covered it too. Shout out to all the tech tubers that have been, well, I was at CES and have also covered all the super coverage. But supposedly it's faster in some aspects because of frame gen and DLSS 3.0, which, you know, we don't really have in the 30 series cards. So there are some aspects that it does get better. I mean, it's a solid 2K gaming like card. It can handle 4K, but to certain exceptions, it's not like, you know, the 80 or the 90 that can pretty much play anything you throw at it, but it's still a solid 2K card. I mean, even if it's intro 4K, it's not so bad.
And the 4080 Super is going to come in with 10,240 CUDA cores, a slightly higher boost clock of 2.55 gigahertz. That's a little bit higher than the regular 4080. Memory bandwidth is still about the same at 256. Memory clock goes a little bit up to 1.437 gigahertz. Memory size still stays the same, 16 gigs of GDDR6X, and the TDP is about the same at 320. Of course, you know, the king right now is the 4090, has 16,000 CUDA cores. God damn. What a bus with 384. God damn. And 24 gigabytes of VRAM. God damn. Yeah,
I mean, for like if what? You think about that, guys. If you think about
it takes that. It takes a lot of electricity too if they run a 4090. It's like, well, you have to change your power supply in order for you to run that thing.
Well, that's the thing that's nice about the newer refreshes is the TDP has gone down a lot on all these cards, on all of them, actually.
I'm surprised the fact that like a 4070 Super is only 20 watt increase than its 4070. So it's actually worth the price for what, $600 for a 4070 Super?
Mm.
And with a lot of CUDA cores too. Like that's like a quarter of CUDA cores more than the 4070. And I think that's like worth it going to upgrade.
As I was trying to say though, is that a lot of the complaints from the prior series or even the base 4070 did not really have a lot of VRAM. I mean, it was under 16. I mean, you think about it, we're looking at what was it, 10, maybe like 8 gigabytes, Mac, thinking back?
Oh, for what?
For the original 4070 or like anything below, it didn't really have 12. Enough VRAM.
Oh, that's small.
12 is okay, but I mean, jumping to 16, that is quite a nice boost given the fact that a lot of games, especially a lot of the AAA titles these days, are demanding a lot of VRAM. So seeing that jump, that, and especially at a, you said a $50 price increase, is not definitely an improvement. Definitely an improvement.
Yeah. Other than that, a lot of what they showed off was all AI based. I'm like, oh, God damn it. Really?
I mean, par for the course for every company that's investing heavily on AI. I mean, NVIDIA being one of the larger ones as of this time and point.
Yeah. And then I think also the big news out of CES is that Twitch is going to finally support AV1 multi-encode.
Given that you have the card that can actually handle it or has it built into its actual card.
So that's everything we have from NVIDIA so far. We'll probably talk about maybe as we go along the 4070 Ti Super, still a dumbass name, and then the 4080 Super. Other things that I noticed at CES, because, you know, kind of the time period that it occurred, I was kind of like dealing with some other stuff. But one of the things that really caught my eye was from LG in this transparent OLED TV, which they're calling OLED T.
What the heck? It looks like glass.
Yeah, it's glass. Oh, and then you can kind of pull like a curtain back if you want to have like a background for the TV.
What? Oh, that's hella weird. Ooh. Okay, so it just reminds me of like, okay, so it kind of reminds me of the headset that Apple's giving out. It's not around your eye. Yeah, the Vision Pro. It's not around your eye. It's not around your eyes, but it has that visuals where it's like, oh, it's so clear that you can actually like, what was it? You know, look for apps and watch TV with that, which is pretty cool.
Well, that had an official release date recently too, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
I know that. Yeah, they just started putting out advertisements for that too, by the way. So if you were watching TV recently, they have been putting out advertisements for the Vision Pro.
Vision Pro got announced, and we actually have an official release date now that we're not like kind of wondering what the hell is going to be outside of it being $3,000 to pick up the headset.
I mean, I knew about the pricing for the headset back when we first talked about it.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just now we actually have an official release date because it was still like in the clouds, like not even like a couple weeks back.
Now I know what you're talking about. Yeah, they announced it for, I believe it's February. And yeah, sure, why not? My only question about this LG TV is, will it use 3.6 gigabytes of data per day?
Very likely.
No. Have you heard about this shit from LG? Apparently, somebody found out that their washer was sending 3.6 gigabytes of data per day.
Oh.
For a washing machine.
Yeah, that's a glitch in the washing machine's part. Things are not supposed to be that way.
Or maybe it is.
I don't know.
Collecting data, everything that they wash, everything that they do, the cycles, all that.
Okay, Jeff Bezos, stop stealing my information, okay? I get it for my Alexa, right?
I mean, our phones are always listening, Nate. How do you think they always try to get us with our Google search results?
True. And, okay, yeah. Although, to be fair, I blame data brokers for that.
Let's see. I mean, some things that TV is like pretty interesting. If I had to really say anything, like there are a lot of interesting things coming out of CES as well. I mean, I don't mean like to change gears real quick, but Intel was absent. AMD was there, although they left all of it kind of at home, but they have their new 8000 series. God forbid they don't ever stick away from the number line, but the 8000 series is coming out and heavily going to be focused with AI in the chip. Which
I mean, I'm assuming that's the future now. Like they're going to implement AI in their, you know, CPUs or something.
Well, I mean, Intel's kind of falling on the same bandwagon. We actually know nothing about their next generation of chips, given the fact they were there, but they were pretty absent-minded about.
They were just there to promote whatever they have at the moment, because they didn't have a big announcement that like kind of blew our mind or anything like that. Like, not like NVIDIA or anything.
Well, I mean, it's shocking to see that AMD does a presentation, but like Intel was there. They tendly talked about AI like at the start of the start of the conference, kind of, like right at the start of the conference during like the like opening ceremonies, so to speak, but like outside of that, there was nothing to really show for Intel.
I see.
So as far as like the big computer companies like AMD and Nvidia showed out, but not really Intel. Samsung, like Asus. Actually, I'll get the Samsung. We'll get the Samsung in a little bit, but Asus has a lot of interesting things coming out. Not only through their ROG line, but also through their baseline. Which anyone see that double screen tablet, or at least the double screen laptop they have coming out?
Oh yeah, I'm like, what the fuck is that? That looks pretty cool.
When you need to focus on your work, but you want to stream or do other things, or maybe you might be looking at the stocks or whatever. I mean, it's an interesting concept for that laptop.
Oh, nice.
Our Zephyrus is completely now like irrelevant because the new Zephyruses from ROG have either AMD or the new Intel chips in them. That's and they really, all have 40. They all have 40 series cards in them now.
So this whole laptop. Sorry, are you talking about the laptop right now? I'm just seeing the video of it at the moment. It's like, huh, interesting.
It's an interesting laptop. Referring to like the laptop that the blog has.
Oh, okay.
The Zephyrus Z16 and Z15, or actually Z14 and Z16. The 16 can go as high as a 4090 in it with an Intel chip in it, or you can go down to a 4080 with an AMD 8000 chip in it. And it's like, great. Now the blog's laptop is irrelevant because the fact that these damn things are already out and making us look like chumps. Great.
No, so I'm looking. Yeah, so I'm looking at that laptop. It says the Asus ZenScreen Fold. So it's pretty much like a full-on screen that's folded. Is that right?
Precisely.
Huh. I mean, you can use. I mean, does it mean that your keyboard is on the screen itself? Wait, I gotta look back at this video. Oh, it is. Oh, that's interesting. And they said they have a brand new glasses. Huh. So they have making vision stuff, I see.
So kind of competing with Apple.
I have a feeling like since Apple is going through Vision Pro, Asus is doing the same thing too. I mean, I feel like tech is going into your glasses, trying to make them smart, you know? I
mean, it's pretty much going to the point where everything's not going to be VR, or at least they're trying to do VR, but they're mostly going AR.
Yeah, yeah.
Just ever so closely recognizing that this year is.
Yeah. So it's like, it's interesting because, like, I think that's just how the future is looking like. Because, like, tech companies are doing things just to have it make it easier for you by using things are making. I'll come back to this. They want tech to actually make it easier for you to just, you know, do it from your hands instead of actually just going for your laptop or anything like that. So when I look at this whole glasses part, Apple's doing it. I think Google's probably doing the same thing too. I would imagine like tech companies are just going to go look into the hot thing that they're looking at and try to make their own version of it, which, you know, is like a competition between tech companies, which is great. Well, not great, but still they want to try to make their own versions, make it better to say.
Well, if that's the case, then Apple would have been on the foldable game a long time ago. But
yeah,
Apple's currently not having a foldable anytime soon, yet LG and Samsung and, you know, all of them have some sort of foldable phone that you could have.
Not to mention LG have their foldable screen TVs now and all that jazz. Not to mention
I saw that
one too. Collaboration they did with Corsair earlier in the year.
Well, let's say the least. I mean, Asus looks like they have a pretty neat line of like laptops, computers, and other techware that's coming out in the near future for them, which is great. To be fair, nothing when it comes to graphics cards, but that's still neat for them to do.
Not that we really need any more like ROG cards, anyways. They're always cream of the crop, always the most expensive cards on the market, and the ones that are in most demand. I was gonna say earlier, as far as like the AR part of it, we're inching ever so close to SAO, guys. It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen.
We're not gonna jump into a new world yet. We're just doing we're just pretty much having a laptop in our eyes now. Not games yet. Unless you want to count like the Oculus or Quest stuff, yes, you're kind of about to be in that virtual world.
Well, even with like the AR version, we're pretty much going into like the ordinal scale part of like SAO. I mean, God forbid the Def game ends this year, guys. Like, finally, like the game, everyone's going to come out of the game this year. Mm-hmm. This October, it's going to happen.
Speaking of Samsung, I don't know if they had a presence over at CES, but they definitely had a splash.
Very minor.
Very minor. But they actually had their own event, a la what's going on with Apple, for Galaxy AI. And so they actually showed off their brand new Samsung Galaxy S24, S24 Plus, S24 Ultra. And all of these phones will now come with Galaxy AI, also AI from Google. And as somebody comes from an Apple background, you know, at least a couple, first couple minutes of the Galaxy AI presentation, like, oh, yeah, cool. You know, they have this old AI feature. Oh, man, that'd be kind of cool if there was an iPhone, or this would be kind of cool if there was an iPhone, right? But it just kept going on and on and on. And it's like, are you ever talk about the phones? Or I'll talk about fucking AI all fucking day long. Ooh. And it dragged on. And I'm like, please make it stop. I get it. You're packing this thing with AI where you can go somewhere and you can circle and it'll search for that item you circled or something like that. Or you could actually highlight a line.
Something that Apple hasn't done yet. Yeah. They're going to just steal it 2 years later from now anyway, but like they do with every Android feature that we did like 4 years before. But being able to literally like not have to go into Google Lens and actually have to like search or enter a photo, you can literally just circle the image, or just pretty much be able to take the stylus out, be able to circle an image and actually be able to find what you're looking for. It comes in fucking handy, bro. Like,
yeah, no, and I totally get it. And I'm not going to, so first off, I'm not going to debate you about what Apple fucking does, because I could do it all fucking day about how sometimes it's not who's first who gets it fucking right. But I'm not going to go there today. That's not what we're here for. I'm here to talk about Galaxy AI and the fact that, look, I'm very impressed about it. However, this part of the Galaxy AI kind of makes my penis soft. It's the fact it makes my penis soft. Because this may not be around forever, or might not be free forever. Let's put it that way. If you look at the Galaxy S24 Ultra product page, and this is pointed out in our Verge article, it says that Galaxy AI features will be provided for free until the end of 2025 on supported Samsung Galaxy devices. Different terms may apply for AI features provided by third parties. So,
what's to say? I mean, it's not there then, but I mean, maybe they're doing an upgrade to it. Maybe there's a whole new like version of it. Maybe there's something better along the pipeline for the newer Galaxies. I mean, we are just getting into the S24 this year. What's to say the S25, S26 by that time has either something better or the AI? Of course, technology is always improving, man. I can always just say that by the time we get to the S26, the AI could be a lot smarter or so much more intelligent that it could be part of the reason why they're saying, oh, it's not going to be available at this time or after this amount of time. I mean, sure, there is the theory like you're about to make. I already know you're going to make it of a subscription-based theory, but I have reason to believe it's just because of the fact that when they get down to the newer phones, it might move on to something else, or at least a more new and improved version of their AI.
Mm-hmm. And you are right. I am going to bring up the subscription model argument, but it's just more of like, if you really want to stick it to the knife of Apple, you would say, we're going to support this as long as we can, and we're going to continue to update it, and future phones will get the same things, but also this phone will also get the same feature, until you kind of realize that way, it's kind of getting obsolete, and we can't really update the phone anymore, a la what Apple does. Mm. So,
I mean, from what Samsung said, like the Google Pixel series, the Galaxy line is going to get security updates and everything updated for the next, I believe it was 7 to 10 years before it becomes completely just no more support.
Oh, yeah. And go ahead.
And at the very least, it's not like a la Apple where like, oh, hey, we're going to either throttle your phone or force you to buy a new phone. because we don't want to help you out or support it any further. So go blow another $1,000 that you don't have.
Can I say this, though? The S24 actually does look like a pretty interesting product, besides the fact of the Galaxy AI. And I'm a person who has a Samsung phone. So
I'm a huge Galaxy user myself. So.
Oh, you are? Okay. What phone do you have?
I haven't upgraded my phone in the last generation, so I am two generations behind with the S22 Ultra. Mm. However, it's a faster processor. Everything else is going to be a lot better. Of course, we have the AI built into it. Now, something I'm kind of disappointed about, but it does make some sense. They did take out the 10 times optical zoom in favor of the five optical zoom. However, it still has the 100 times zoom for not the greatest quality, but like
it isn't. But it's like it's if you really want really microscopic results, which still doesn't give out really good quality to say. I've had phones where like they give out the 100 times zoom. Say for example, take a picture of the moon, then you might have a clear shot of that. I think that's the reason why they do that 100 times zoom thing. So you say, for example, look at the top of a building and use the 100 times zoom and you see something clear up from there. Maybe that's the issue there.
It's just like, yeah, you have a better camera, but you lose.
I mean, don't get me wrong, though. Samsung has really awesome cameras. Like,
I'm not denying that.
Yeah, I'm just like surprised because like when I got my, I think I have the same phone as you, but I have the regular Samsung S22. Mm-hmm. But I just was so shocked, like so stunned to see like how the graphics are, or, like how the camera quality is. So like I could take a selfie, the picture is very clear. I could take a picture from like, you know, a selfie or like with people around, like cosplayers, for example. And then those end up being like super clear as well. So if anything, I really do love the Galaxy, especially the fact that like I take photos here and there. I would record like a video stuff there. And it's very neat. Like they have so many great settings. Like you can change your camera to have just like ultra HD, which is great. I believe next up is 4K. So if you can record, if the S24 can record in 4K, then like sign me up. I'm gonna probably grab that phone. And yes,
I hate to burst your bubble here, bud, but our S22s already can record in 4K. Hell, they can actually record.
But they recorded in UHD because, like, I'm looking at my camera right now. The only high quality I have is UHD. Is that 4K or?
I think that is 4K.
We can record in 4K, but even if you want to break the boundaries even further, the S22s were the first phones ever.
Oh no, we can. 8K. That's right. There's 8K here. Oh shit. Yeah.
With the camera increasing. We get better results with 4K, but now we get even higher resolutions at 8K. So the 8K part of it is actually getting a much, much, much more very big improvements to the point where it's more clear, have higher clarity than what we had with our 22s. I know 23 had a bit of big improvement, but 24, from what I've seen in the videos, is quite a jump.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, now I want to test this out. The fact that like, well, I'm currently on my phone right now. I'm doing selfie mode, and I can actually get 4K in my selfie mode with UHD, which is pretty sick. And then 8K on the other side, which is like the other side of the phone. So
I mean, the funny thing is, if we really wanted to record cons in 8K, technically you and I could.
Well, the other thing too is that it will take a lot of memory, which means you have to clear out all of the videos while we can. The built-in memory, it's not built-in memory that we have right now. The S24 has the 256 gigabyte memory, which can actually last a long time for us to hold videos in 4K. So, you know, it doesn't matter about the high definition and things like that. As long as it actually is like clear quality, then it definitely is an amazing camera.
As I was trying to get at, though, Nate, there's really no point for us to record in 8K because not many people outside the rich and the wealthy have monitors or TVs can handle 8K like content.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if we were to record anything in 8K, there's only like certain like formats on YouTube that handle it. Any other like streaming or website that can play video content really can't really support 8K. So what's the point?
No, I understand. But it just gives us an idea about like how crazy it will get, because if we can get 4K in the S22, the S24 will probably give us higher quality of 4K video.
Especially that new Snapdragon processor, Nate.
So that's what's telling me, like, I haven't upgraded my phone in a while, but it's been, what, over 3-4 years since I have this phone? Is it time for me to upgrade now? Possibly. It looks really neat, so who knows?
Oh, and guess what? We took one from Apple's book, guys. Our phone has titanium on it this time.
Do we have there's four different colors?
And it comes in four different, like, non-binary colors. So, like, yeah.
You can get the S24 Plus in like 7 colors. You can get the S24 regular in the same amount of colors. The Ultra has 4 colors. Oh no, it literally is 7 colors. So it's pretty sick. And titanium, yes. They're all titanium.
But will it actually have more titanium than the Apple, what was it, the Max?
The Apple. It's the 15. I was going to say, is the 15, like, is all 15 titanium? Is that, like, the appeal?
So, Jerry Rick.
I believe it's just the Pro line. That's titanium.
Mm. Okay, because I keep on seeing, like, titanium and then Apple iPhone 15, and I'm like, wait, does titanium go to all Apple iPhone 15s? But I guess not.
It's just the higher end, not to mention also it's already been proven there's not really any real big amount of titanium in the phone. So, like, yeah, you know, Jerry everything pretty much already covered that one. You can go find that on YouTube, or we can post that in the show notes if we'd like.
Yep.
Meanwhile,
you guys done?
Sorry, but I'm just gonna say, okay, sorry, we're just being Samsung guys here.
Sorry that the Apple camp is bored over here.
No, it's just, we're going to move on, okay? We're going to
move on. Just move on. Let's not
want to turn out to it through our podcast. I do not want to debate you guys. I think we should be past
if anything, Apple versus, like, Samsung. If anything, Apple has its perks, Samsung has its perks. I mean, I'm not going to compare both, like, phones here in this episode.
I see the benefits of having an iPhone. I see benefits of having an S24. I see the drawbacks of having an iPhone. I see the drawbacks of having an S24.
Yes, but I'm just talking in a technical term right now. Yeah. How the Samsung Galaxy S24 is better than the S22. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, what speaks to you more? We're a unique ecosystem, you know? Because, like, oh my god, there's the really awesome S24. you know. Like, there's a multitude of factors. So, you know, be happy whatever you have, you know. And yes, we can rib at one another about, you know, what's better and who's stealing from what, and does it really matter if they're first to the market, if it's not the best out of the market? That doesn't really matter. The point of the matter is that, you know, you could not have the discussion a decade ago about, like, all the advanced recording, advanced photo taking techniques, all that shit. So
we were barely dropping, like, flip phones like 10 years ago.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think.
To be fair, like, everybody's going back into the flip phones. Look at like other big brands doing it. Yeah.
And look, you brought it back. Well, I mean, technically Motorola did it because they had the new Razr, but technically Samsung did it first. But
Razors, Motorola still exists, apparently. They still want that Razr back. That was the starting point of those flip phones.
Well, I mean, flip phones existed, but, like, the true, like, tried and true, like, high-end, like, kind of, like, everyone had a Razr phone, like, back in, like, the early, like, knots. Like, I had a Razr for, like, so long.
Mm-hmm.
Those phones were cool. I'm not going to deny it.
I had a Razr. I mean, I grew up with that. That was awesome. I had that for, like, I think four or five years before I switched over to a smartphone.
Yeah, I definitely had a Razr, and then I went to a Droid, and then I kind of just went from there. The other topic that we have tonight is, I was kind of inspired by this pair of announcements for Persona 3 Reload collaborations. One is, you may not have heard of this one. It's with Keiko Electric Railway. Yeah, I know, right?
No, I never heard of it, no.
Essentially, it's a train line between Shibuya and Kichikoji. And it basically is kind of like a railway system. And between February 9th and till February 25th, that's February, they're doing this collaboration. And what's cool about this is that there's within the train, it's going to be wrapped with Persona 3 Reload stuff. And also the voice actor for Aegis, Maya Sakamoto, will provide broadcast announcements. So you will hear in Aegis's voice about where the next stop is.
Oh, that's cool.
In Japan. Yes. We're going to get in that in just a second. But there's also this digital stamp rally. There's also keychains you can buy and all that cool stuff. However, there's also in Japan. The other one that you may have heard of is for Wendy's.
Yep.
In Japan.
I know. That makes me sad that it's going to be only in Japan.
Yeah. So for, I think for 780 yen, so that's about $8, you can buy fries, and it also comes with the original A4 clear file.
Nice.
You also can get like actual food, like a burger or shake, or it looks like chili.
Spaghetti. It looks like spaghetti from one of the dishes I see here.
And that's from Mitsuru.
Yeah, that's a Mitsuru spaghetti. And then you have, what does Akihiko have? Look like chicken nuggets?
It looks like chicken nuggets or tater tots.
Did they put it down as a list, or is it just in a picture?
It's just a picture.
Looks like chicken nuggets to me. And with cheese on top? Aw.
There's like a Yukari shake, there's a parfait for Junpei, and then there's like a drink for Aegis.
I guess so, yeah. But that's pretty cool, like, all the characters having their own, like, dishes, so... Oh man, freaking protag with the burger. That's not a baconator, but it's like a bacon double bacon cheeseburger there.
And then of course there's also like the keychains and the pins, and of course the you know, the image collaboration, the fact that not only you have the main cast, but you also have Strega, which includes Chidori, Jin, and Takaya, but also Pharos, Ryoji, and Elizabeth.
Oh my god, just look at what they have for the merch though. They got, pins, yeah. Yes. And mini standees. It has every character. So it's like all the characters that you'll meet over in the game. This is so cool. Oh man, Ken's so cute. The fuck? You also get the sticker pack for 1,400 yen. Yeah. Oh my god. Oh god. Why don't we have this shit?
Man. Now Ryan because... has been saying. Oh god. I know where you're gonna start. Go ahead.
Because one simple like quotation I keep saying from Ed and Eddie Nate, it's because it's in Japan.
Uh-huh.
Or to make it easier, because we're going to kind of go to discussion about not only Japan, but also Southeast Asia. It really comes down to, why can't America get all the cool shit?
Yeah.
Because if you look at not only the collaborations we see with Persona 3 Reload, but as you saw in the past, you know, we talked about this previously on the podcast, the fact that there was the P5R, or was it P5R or P5T? Was it the collab in the Philippines?
It was for Tactica. Wait, no. Tactica was here in the States for the Japanese barbecue spot.
But there was an in-house event that they did in the Philippines for Tactica, I believe. It was Persona 5. And then, as we've talked about before, you know, there's been countless Arknights collaborations. There's been countless ones with like other games. You know, I've seen on occasion like an advertisement for Nikkei in the Philippines at a restaurant, for example, or like a fast food joint.
Say what?
Yeah. And there was a standee and it says, play the game now. It kind of got my juices thinking about like why it's so hard to have like this type of marketing in the United States. And there's a couple of reasons why. Number one, of course, is money, because it's really hard to do marketing for an anime or a video game, and you really kind of pick your poison of where exactly you're going to be marketing. And it all depends on, like, you know, because, like, for example, like, the Japanese really love their anime. They really love the series. Like, I remember a while back for Lelouch's birthday for Code Geass Lost Stories, they drove around, like, these trucks that would have billboards on it. And it literally had, like, the phrase, Happy Birthday Lelouch on it. And it had a photo of him as well as the logo for Lost Stories. And they were promoting the game while promoting the fact that, yes, it was Lelouch's birthday. And I'm like, how come we can't see that shit in the U.S.? And historically, there's been examples of, like, anime marketing. There's another section we'll get into a little bit later. But, like, anime marketing in general, how Japan approaches it versus how much the U.S. approaches anime marketing. And it really comes down to, it's just the fact that a lot more people care about anime in Japan and Southeast Asia versus the United States. Because I think one of the things we kind of forget about, we talk about anime on this podcast. We are anime fans, but we're also fans of, you know, mainstream music. You know, I like anime. I also like Taylor Swift. I also like the NFL. I like the NBA. I like watching, you know, movies on Netflix. And in America, there is a huge, huge, huge swath of things for us to do and watch and consume. A lot of the media that we see more often is promoted more, especially if it comes in-house with the United States. And I want to go back really quick to one collaboration I remember hearing about was for Ark Knight to KFC. Well, that was only in Japan and I believe Southeast Asia, or might have been China. They're now just getting around in 2024 to get the clearance to release the skins on the global server for Ark Knights in 2024. That collaboration with KFC, I think it was like 2 or 3 years ago. So they're finally not getting around to just doing that collaboration just for the skins, because that was in a tie-in with KFC. Now, in the United States, there has been a collaboration, not with Ark Knights though, a little-known game called Diablo 4. And if you look at, for example, like Chipotle right now is being, you know, it's a big sponsor of Street Fighter VI. They're now getting into Tekken 8. They're going to start promoting that. I think they'll probably do the same exact thing, but with, you know, with the Challenger series and having like themed bowls for Tekken, which is kind of cool because I'm like, man, Chipotle is really carrying the FGC. But if you look at what is being promoted in the U.S. versus what being promoted in Japan, a lot of it in America is your mainstream hits, your fighting games, your Call of Duties of the world. Maybe on occasion you might get a Madden or an NBA 2K, or, you know, some sort of like wide release, maybe like the new Skyrim or some shit like that. But in Japan, it's a lot more nuanced than you get, like, for example, Persona 3 Reload billboards in Shibuya or Ikebukuro. Or you get, you get raps on trains. Well, we don't really get that in the U.S. because to them, they're having to compete a lot more in the American market than this Japanese market.
I mean, keep in mind, like, there are a lot of, like, things in the United States that people like to promote a lot more than whatever they have in Japan. So you may not have a lot of Persona stuff in here in the United States, but Japan, because it's a source from Japan, is the reason why they keep on making these collab stuff here and there. Here in America, you'll get things like what you've said, Matt, Diablo 4, which is made from Blizzard here in the States. And then also mind the fact that they also do make promotions for like other big games like Call of Duty, for example. You mean every freaking like restaurant, every freaking like energy drink, grocery, like, item out there will have, like, something to promote Call of Duty 3, like a free code or something to help your game experience.
Buy a 2-topping Little Caesars pizza, get a free skin in the game, and double XP for, like, a whole hour.
And keep in mind, too, like, when it comes to, like, American stuff that gets promoted here, I mean, do you remember the Game Awards? They give away free Chipotles? Like, if anything, those restaurants are at least... Wait, what?
That was Evo.
Oh, I thought it was. Well, nonetheless, I mean, it's still something that they get a collab with. So it's like restaurants can even collab with fighting games, and the way they do it is by giving out free food during these events.
Yeah, but I think fighting games, for example, Street Fighter and Tekken, they're Japanese based. So I think that's the closest we're getting so far to what I kind of want to see is like, how come we can't get a Persona 3 Reload collab with Wendy's? And it's because not only because of what the market is, but honestly, population density kind of plays a key part. And I had past chats with ChatGPT. There's some in the show notes that I had recently with it. But realistically, if you look at Southeast Asia and Japan at a whole, yes, there's about 156 million people in Japan. Most of them live in major cities. Tokyo, Yokohama, Kobe, Osaka, Nagoya, whatnot. If you look at Southeast Asia, everyone is concentrated in Manila, Jakarta, Singapore. So when it comes to them marketing, for the amount of money that you could spend to grab that many more eyeballs is not that much. But if you come over to America, for example, and wanted to do a Persona 3 Reload collab, you can't do it across the United States. You know, it's a lot harder to do that than it is to do a Wendy's. Because I think for like the Wendy's collaboration for Persona 3 Reload, it's like 6 locations. So then you would have to do something like 6 locations on the West Coast, somewhere close to the Alice headquarters. Because why are you going to spend the money to ship out stuff for Persona 3 Reload collab with Wendy's in the United States to somewhere like Omaha, Nebraska, or Little Rock, Arkansas, or Milwaukee, Wisconsin, or Chattanooga, Tennessee? They don't know what the fuck Persona 3 Reload is. But we do here in California, or New York, or the Texas Triangle, or maybe Seattle.
I'd also like to apologize to anyone from any of those prospective regions that actually know about Persona.
You know what I'm saying. It's the fact that I know there's fans all across America, but if you're looking at it from a pure marketing standpoint, it's like, where are we going to get the most bang for our buck? And right now, the most bang for your buck is Japan or Southeast Asia, because it's more packed. You have more people for more eyeballs in the same exact places. And it's a lot, you know, it's a lot better than, oh, we're going to buy a billboard in LA, or we're going to buy a billboard in San Francisco. All right, cool. I mean, but how many people are going to see it if people are going to know about it?
Right.
And historically, we've seen this example before. There's two that I always bring up. That's Code Geass and Pizza Hut and Domino's and Otsuribiku. We knew when Code Geass aired that Pizza Hut was a big sponsor of Code Geass. They had pizza boxes splattered with their logo all over it when it came to the Japanese broadcast. But when it came to the American side broadcast on Adult Swim, that was censored.
Wait, what was censored again? The
Pizza Hut logo in the American broadcast of Code Geass was censored.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because I don't know, was it just because they couldn't promote it or anything? Is it just
licensing?
Licensing, yeah.
That's what it really comes down to, is licensing and whether or not you feel like it's going to be worth the cost. Because we got to remember, you know, Code Geass was really popular in Japan, but as much as we loved it here, was it really popular enough to justify the cost for Yum Brand in the United States? To say, we'll pay for that license. Because according to ChatGPT, you know, the reason why is like, you know, why send us the logo? Does Yum Brands not like money? It really comes down to licensing. There's also, you know, broadcasting standards. There's also marketing strategies, audience perception, you know, the agreements, and then branding.
Right.
Code Geass in Japan was really popular. But what do we always say about Code Geass? It's a show about terrorism.
Yeah.
You know, with butts in it. So maybe it may have not been a good look, especially in anime in the 2000s, because anime was still growing at that time frame. And to have something as, you know, popular as Code Geass, yes, but also kind of like if I was young person, I'd say, so like, do I really want to promote this anime that may be received differently in the United States versus it is in Japan?
Okay, you got a point there.
And then, of course, years later, we had the Domino's on Hatsune Miku promotion with the app. Remember the app, guys? Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Not many people remember it. Pepperidge Farm remembers.
did you guys actually download the app? Did you guys ever try it out to see if you could get it to work?
And last but not least, the live performance. Start the pizza stage live and point the camera towards the pizza box, and the pizza box will turn into a live dancing venue.
Matt, no, when the app came out and we were like together, you would not just shut up about it. Just like, not gonna lie, just like Persona, you just would not shut up about it.
What, about the app?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the biggest problem is that in order for the app to really work to get the grand show at the end, you had to buy a pizza with the code on it. The only problem is you couldn't buy the pizza in America because it's only Japan only. So the only thing you had to do really was to download a photo and see if the app could recognize the photo of the box, and then you get the performance. But it's kind of like, wait, why not bring the Hatsune Miku promotion over from Domino's? But you got to realize it's like, well, because Hatsune Miku has now compete with everybody else in America. Hatsune Miku is her own shit in Japan. But outside of Japan, it's really hard to try to break into a market.
That's not true, here in the States at least, because you know how she sells really well here in the States.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about the early aughts, like around the time of the promotion. Nowadays, yeah, I mean, she's good enough to be at fucking Coachella. Again. I think it's the second year in a row that she's at Coachella.
Yeah, and we get snubbed from our LA show again. Thanks, Coachella.
Oh, that makes fucking sense now about why there's no LA show, because she's going to Wow.
Yeah, but it would have been nice if they announced that prior.
Yeah.
I kind of want to stretch this out a little bit more. And it's not only just like these collaborations, you know, with various, you know, Japanese anime and video games and gacha gaming. If you look at conventions in the United States versus Japan versus Southeast Asia, something like Comic Fiesta in Jakarta or Anime Festival Asia, I believe is what it's called, or AFA for short. They recently had a show in Singapore. And at the time, I was like, damn, they got hella people. They got Flo, they got Nami Tamaki, they got all of these Hololive people. Hololive's a little bit easier because basically it's just them being in fucking avatars. They had Spire, they had Halka, and I'm like, wait a minute. And we talked about this last week. Where the fuck are they from the Anime Expo? How come I have to, you know, go to, you know, see all these names? They go to Jakarta and Singapore and Manila, and they go on tour up and down Japan, yet they're so scared of the United States. You know, not only from an artist standpoint, but also like these various voice actors and voice actresses that we want to see come to the US. We want to see more of them come. Like, I'm still waiting for my fucking man crush, Jun Fukuyama, to make it a US appearance. We're all waiting for Shoji Meguro to show up in the United States.
Be grateful that we even got the Taiyokan performance that we did with the Lotus Shoko, and
Yumi Kamimura. Yeah. But even then, you know, I kind of want to talk about that because, yes, and that is an argument that I kind of want to come in with, is why can't we get the same stadium size performances or concert hall performances from something like Persona Super Live or Idolmaster or Love Live? Or, you know, I recently saw a video of Yasobi performing to a packed out crowd. I'm like, how can we get half this shit in America?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the other thing too is like, I mean, if anything, we do get that. It's not like they have their own concert, unfortunately. They have to go through an event. Like Yasobi, for example, going to Coachella. Yeah, she's going to Coachella and has to be under an event, not under her concert. Although, to be fair, there are some bands that ever that do come to America, like, what was it, Flo having their own tour here in the States.
They almost did.
Almost did. But I mean, other bands and other artists are doing their thing to at least try to. I mean, for example, Radwimps, they did a tour here last year. But then also, but the other thing too is, like, again, an event would also hold them as well. I mean, you've seen Flo and Fanime, you've seen Shaq at AX, for example. I mean, that's not a Japanese band, but still, I mean, it's Shaq. I mean, everyone knows him. It's just crazy, like, how things can get when it comes to having artists come over here to the States, but most likely it's just going to be held under an event for them to perform there.
Dude, but look at this video I just posted on our Discord. Look at that.
You also be. Yeah, oh, that's
her performing. Yeah, look at that. Look at all those people.
Oh, you're talking about like a big dome, like.
Yeah.
Tokyo Dome. Oh. And that's, yeah. And then, I look at everybody too. It's, like, they have their own like lights as well. I mean, I would imagine they just brought it to the cult concert themselves because, yeah, it's.
Nowadays, it's not a concert if you don't have a pen light somewhere. You know?
Yeah. Oh, and I do love the fact that, like, the whole show itself looks amazing, from like the stage and the lasers they put up, and just everybody over there just having a fun time singing the song. To say, it kind of feels like Love Live. Not gonna lie, because usually these Love Live concerts are like this
in Japan.
I know in Japan.
In Japan.
Okay, hold on. You want to talk about fucking Love Live? Give me 1 second. I found a link.
Do you have the Love Live and Idolmaster concerts results or anything like that?
I have this one. This is
Oh, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, this is the fourth live. This is all the way back from a couple years ago. But again, look at that fucking crowd.
And that's and FYI, just remember that they're all in the center stage and everything. This is a very packed crowd, and everybody, I don't know what when it comes to like the structure of like concerts and things like that, but we don't have those kind of big facilities. They don't hold 100,000 folk. They don't hold 100,000 folk.
We do. It's called SoFi Stadium. It's called Levi Stadium. It's called the Hollywood Bowl. We have these facilities to do this.
I mean, you held concerts, but they're mostly American concerts. American artists that are going through these concerts, like Taylor Swift, for example. I know that there are so many people going for that concert. But then again, a lot more other artists. But then when it comes to Japanese artists, are we going to expect a packed house like this over at Levi's or SoFi? Not likely.
With the right Japanese artist, I believe it can happen.
Really?
I look at this video from Love Live and it's like, I want to be in the middle of that. Look at that crowd.
I want to be a part of that. I still have my pen lights, and I would love to be like one of those, just like rooting for Yohane or something. Yoshiko.
What Matt's getting at is, though, like what Matt is getting at, he's saying that technically 18 and 19 don't count for AX at this capacity.
Yeah. If you look at what AX did for Aquarius, then you look at this.
Okay, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm just saying, like, for Aquarius, why do you think it got sold out so quickly? Because there's so many fans that wanted to go
watch them. 3,000? What, a 3,000 to 5,000 seat theater?
5,000, like that, around 5,000 to say. It's just very small, I understand. But, like, if they ever make it to SoFi Stadium, yes, that would be an epic crowd of many people going to it. Yeah,
this is that Tokyo Dome.
Damn. No, yeah. I know. Tokyo Dome has a lot of capacity.
It has a lot of capacity. The biggest capacity we have so far, yes. Like, you know, again, SoFi Stadium, Levi Stadium. If you want to do it on a smaller scale, you have Crypto.com Arena, the new Intuit Arena that's being built for the Clippers, Golden One Center, Chase Center. You have these type of facilities. You have the ability to have all these types. The biggest problem is, once again, is money. Because to throw this type of production is a lot.
And the other thing too is like, will they invest in holding, sorry, would the stadium hold in investing these artists to perform there?
Yeah, because the biggest thing too is that it's not only them just showing up. It's look at the elaborate sets that they have for each of the songs that they do. And the fact that you can kind of see there's one where it's like they're on a giant ship.
Right.
And it's like you can only really do that in Japan because it's a lot cheaper to do that there than it is to come over, bring that over to something like SoFi Stadium or Levi Stadium or Crypto.com Arena or Golden One Center and try to do that same type of production. It's just way too much money. And then I don't know if you're able to sell it out because as much as we see it here, you know, a lot of people can fit inside Tokyo Dome. There's a lot of Love Life fans in Japan. You know, in the United States, as much as we want to think that, we could easily pack SoFi Stadium, maybe we couldn't because it's, you know, unless you're like Taylor Swift or like BTS, for example, because I think some people would kind of counter with me and say, what about K-pop? Well, how is K-pop able to pack all of those stadiums, you know, especially the ones you see on the East Coast or like in Texas, for example? Why are they able to pack? Because something like BTS and like K-pop in general, that's a different engine, not to mention you kind of a little bit of push of the South Korean government pushing K-pop out as kind of like their way of like goodwill, but also like, hey, look at this so that you can look bad, so that we can look bad in North Korea, you know, shit, you know, propaganda type of shit.
Really, I'm going to put this very simply for you. BTS is pretty much the Beatles of South Korea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but also like Blackpink or 2NE1.
It's gonna be Blackpink definitely is like at the same level as BTS.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that like the reason why they would do this because it's also a large following, but also kind of too again there's a little bit of a push from the South Korea government. If Japan really wanted to, they could push out the likes of Love Live and Yasobi and Ado to the scale that we're seeing here. Because, yes, Ado is coming to the U.S. At Peacock Theater. That's great. What if Ado went to Crypto.com Arena or went to the Hollywood Bowl or went to the Chase Center instead of going to the Bill Graham Civic Center, which is a great facility, but it's no Chase Center in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to really feel because, like, yes, seeing these, you know, like these – like these videos, and we've seen all the Persona Super Lives that have come out. They can pack, you know, a lot of people. Yes, I would love to be in that. But what Ryan and I experienced at TayoCon 2015 is something a lot of people won't get in Japan. I mean, you might, but, you know, a lot of my first memory of having interactions with the big three was at a small intimate session in Mesa, Arizona. And I think sometimes we kind of forget about that when we see all of these packed crowds and we see, oh my God, you know, it's so, you know, we have camaraderie and everyone is dressed up, has pen lights everywhere. It's like, sometimes you just kind of have to, you know, be grateful that some people are willing to do a small show and it's a lot more intimate. It's a lot more, you know, of a clearer picture per se. Yeah. And, you know, there's, you know, we talked about visas for, you know, conventions, like, oh yeah, there's visa issues. And the fact that it's like for visa issues, like in the United States, it's really hard to get a visa compared to like, let's say Southeast Asia. So you know, there's kind of that. And, you know, of course, you know, all of these companies, you know, I kind of put it to ChatGPT is like, so you're going to alienate your fan base then? But it's like, that's not true. It's really what it comes down to is time and money.
Pretty much, yeah. And again, it's more of like, well, will someone from the United States invest in having like a Japanese artist come here into their stadium to say? Because what I'm seeing right now is that they can, but it's mostly on small areas. Look at Flo and the SJ Civic Auditorium. Looking at Radwimps, they also perform there as well. Do they perform at big concerts like SoFi Stadium or Crypto.com Arena? No, not likely. So like, I don't know, maybe it's just the American audience that's not seeing the fact that they're actually really popular. And of course, they're popular in Japan, yes. That's why they have those big concerts in those big auditoriums. But if they come here to the United States, not a lot of the Japanese fans are going to be coming all the way from Japan to the United States to see them, you know?
Or in reverse, is that because they're Japanese, you know, there's some sort of language and cultural barrier. Because one of the things about Southeast Asia is that, you know, there are a lot of people who speak Japanese out there because they do business with Japan, because they're a lot closer. Meanwhile, here in America, like, I think you kind of heard this, I think you kind of seen this a little bit, but, like, you kind of hear, like, this rise of, like, Latin music. Because outside of, you know, kind of, like, our demographic, you know, the big demographic out here is, you know, Latino, Latinx, you know, Spanish speaking. And you're hearing a lot more of, like, you know, the reggaeton and kind of like the Bad Bunnies of the world, you know, and they're being played on mainstream radio in the US because that's a representation of the demographics that we live in. But for a lot of people, you know, you promote Bad Bunny in the US, oh my God, people are gonna fucking pack that shit because, you know, he's hella popular.
Then again, the Latino audience here in the United States is also really big.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of the same comparison about, like, with Japan. Like, yeah, why is, like, if you think about it in reverse.
I feel like, what was it? When it comes to, like, Southeast Asia, or, like, pretty much Asia artists and stuff here and there, they would go to certain places to see them again. Say, for example, Flo performs in Korea. There's some Japanese artists, there's some Japanese fans that would go to Korea to see them, you know? They perform in the Philippines. Some Japanese folks will come down to the Philippines to see them, you know? And that's why they get those packed houses.
Yeah, but also, too, there's a lot more people living in Manila that will go to that show.
True, true. And then again, like, there's a lot of anime fans in the Philippines. Don't get me wrong, they're going...
Yeah, outside. Yeah, and that's also a cultural thing, too, as well, because the fact that in America, there's a lot of competition for our eyes and for our minds through right. American media and stuff that happens. But, like, if you look at Southeast Asia, for example, a lot of them kind of default to Japanese anime and Japanese pop culture because right. outside of some things from the Philippines and from Singapore and Jakarta, Indonesia, for example, a lot of the stuff perceived out there is Japanese.
Right. And don't get me wrong, though. I mean, America, at least, is getting into anime. It's becoming the mainstream here in the United States. But it's not as big compared to, like, other countries. Like,
that's
Philippines.
Come on.
Wait, what?
That's a false statement. Come on.
You don't think so?
Nate, we discussed this last week. We literally discussed this last week. Everyone got picked. We all got picked on as kids for liking anime.
Right. Right.
You know, look how widely
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's very mainstream now that everybody is watching anime. One Piece, Demon Slayer, for example. Those two are, like, right on the tip of my tongue that they would probably announce for. Now that we're seeing that trend up when it comes to, like, their anime theme songs and things of that nature, that's why people who are involved with those shows come over to the States so that they can get, like, what is it, their fame to say. Sorry, I lost my point there, but anyways.
I think historically, the United States has kind of been late to the party. Because if you look at the late 90s, for example, what was it all about? Sailor Moon and Pokemon. And hentai. That's what we can describe the anime as. But if you look at something like Mexico, for example, I was jealous of the fact that Mexico was able to get all the new Dragon Ball before America did. Or the fact that they were getting a lot more of the anime. Same thing with, like, for example, like France and Italy, like, they consumed Japanese anime and manga a lot earlier than what the Americans experienced.
Yeah, it's weird that we like, I think we're kind of referenced that Attack on Titan started the whole thing about anime, about everybody loving anime. Is that right?
No, yeah. Oh, come on. No,
you
no.
think so? Or was it One Piece?
Picture here.
Hmm?
Are you fucking kidding me right now?
What anime did start everybody liking anime?
Are you serious?
Was it One Piece?
Oh, here we go. Matt, are you sure you don't want to throw him out yet? Are you sure?
I'm not saying Attack on... I mean, that's the way I'm looking at right now, that Attack on Titan was the thing that started everybody liking anime. But then...
In the mainstream in the US.
Yes, in mainstream the U.S.
Are we talking outside? No, are we talking outside of like Adult Swim and Toonami?
Well, Attack on Titan came out before it came on Adult Swim.
No, what I'm trying to say is that to a certain point, anime was popular in the 2000s, but not as popular as it was in like Southeast Asia or Mexico or Italy right. or France, where it was a lot more relevant out there than it was in the United States because of the challenge we've talked about on this podcast already. The fact that it was really risky in the 2000s to air anime. You know, there's a reason why we have two versions of Gundam Wing airing in the U.S. Because one of it was we have to censor a swear word, censor some violence on it because it was a risk compared to compared to like the Philippines, for example. They didn't see it as a risk, or they were able to be more kindly accepted of it. Mm-hmm. They were in Mexico, you know.
I mean, the way they kind of put it into Adult Swim is that they actually did make it uncensored to say, because it is quote unquote for adults. I mean, you've seen the animes that came out from Adult Swim, like Cowboy Bebop and Inuyasha, Yu Yu Hakusho, those classics, for example.
But they were late night slots.
Is what I'm saying. It didn't get that hype because it was way too late for everybody to watch.
Yeah, but if you look at like primetime anime in Japan, they air that shit in the evening. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I had to feel like, I understand the point that like here in the United States they were having this whole they had the whole time where it's like they'll not allow violence in animation in shows to say.
Yeah. Really, yeah, honestly, if you really want to talk about when anime got popular is when Crunchyroll got popular. Because they realized like, wait a minute, I can stream all this anime that I want. Yeah.
In like 2008, 2009 or something. Like late 2000s, if I remember.
More like mid-2010s.
Yeah, if you remember, Crunchyroll did come to Fanime before.
Yeah,
before it became the big popular.
In the late 2000s, early 2010s. That was when the concept of streaming Naruto episodes the same time as Japan for extra cost. What?
Yeah. Yeah. And then that was the thing. I mean, and then again, we go to Kiss Anime for all the animes that we watched before back then.
But, you know, Nate is not completely wrong about Attack on Titan. I mean, it was kind of like one of like that first hit in the U.S. It's like, oh, shit, this is what anime could be. It could be popular. It could be ultra-violent, really have a lot of action. And it could have some sort of political intrigue, kind of like a storyline with all these characters that dragged on for way, 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 way too fucking long and finally fucking ended. And we have yet to hear about the recap movies that we're going to get pretty soon. Watch. We're going to get that shit in this year. Watch.
Yes. We are going to check those out.
And I think for some of us who are anime fans, it's, you know, it is disheartening to realize like, yeah, we're not going to get the same promotion that, you know, we look at photos of Akihabara and we see anime advertisements up the fucking wall. So it's like, how come I can't get that? Well, it's because it's a lot easier for them to promote that anime in Akihabara than this is to promote it in like downtown LA, for example.
The only time they do it is when Anime Expo comes out.
Yeah, it has to be surrounded by a convention. It's not like you just promote like, oh, hey, here is the new season of Oshinoko.
Don't get me wrong. The anime companies are also helping in promoting it as well. So like Aniplex promotes Demon Slayer. I remember like in 2020, if I remember, that they were promoting that. I know that was during the pandemic year, but yeah. I know it was in 2020 where we were in the pandemic and AX was closed. They did a virtual one, but advertisements were still going around. Like they did have some sort of contract thing where they would still put the advertisements out.
That is true. Well, but is it going to be a national ad campaign where they're going to be airing stuff during NBA playoffs or during the NFL playoffs or during, you know, prime time?
Yeah. No. That's the thing, because like there are a lot of other things that they believe the audience can get more intrigued with than anime, which is unfortunately.
And
true.
You know, it's funny that I mentioned that because Sega Atlas, they are promoting a game in the United States. It's not Persona though; it's Infinite Wealth.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest factor for Infinite Wealth is that it takes place in Hawaii, so you can bait a lot of people in by saying, "Hey, look at this game." That, yeah, it has, like, Japanese Yakuza people, but it takes us in Hawaii. Look at that. Yay. Mm. more than here is a remake of a game from a couple years ago. Sorry, not a couple years ago, like a decade ago, that we're refreshing. It's about this character who can summon shit, and it's about people who climb a tower, and while you climb a tower, you have to come back down and go to school in Japan. Is that going to really sell, you know, a game? You know, can you really put that game out there during NBA basketball? Probably not. But you could probably put something like
Call of Duty,
if it, you know, or Infinite Wealth, or, you know, back, you know, or like Diablo 4.
I can totally see Infinite Wealth get promoted just because of the whole setting that it's in.
Yeah.
But no, I don't see like other big games that end up getting into the promotions of, like, for example, the Super Bowl. Like, do you know if there are any other like big video games that end up getting those advertisements? I think the only thing that I can see from that, but that would be Call of Duty. You know, those kind of like main hitters that keep on, well, obviously Madden, but the other thing too is like all those other video games that can get promoted over there in a big event like that.
Maybe you're ballsy enough, you announce the new Elder Scrolls during the Super Bowl.
Dude, that would be pretty cool. Dude, everyone's gonna watch it. You know that. Everyone's gonna watch it during that weekend. It's a perfect time to promote your game, but it will be very pricey to do that.
I just wanted to bring it back real quick. I mean, AOT making it popularizing anime in America, like, are you sure about that?
You sure about that?
You sure about that, Nate? Are you sure about AOT being the reason? That's why? I mean, I know we've discussed the whole terrorism thing, the whole, like, anime was being censored like crazy, but think back, guys. Think both of us, all three of us, just think back a little bit. We just got done for talking to the people behind 4Kids, or people that worked for 4Kids at the time. Even if it wasn't the 4Kids animes being Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, you still had Digimon, you still had like the early knots of the not so great One Piece dub then. You had Dragon Ball Z, you had Dragon Ball, technically you had Gundam, you still had Sailor Moon on the way on TV, either the Deke dubs or even the Toonami Day dubs. We had so many great animes that, like, it not only influenced our childhoods, but eventually from the Toonami blocks to the Adult Swim blocks to the late night blocks for Toonami. I mean, not to mention, like, you think about the big three back then, before there was Naruto, Bleach, and of course One Piece as it is now. I mean, there was Dragon Ball Z, there was Sailor Moon, there was Gundam. I mean, there was all the big ones from back then. You can't honestly have any reason to make me believe that AOT is the main reason why we have the biggest influx of population to the anime community here in the United States. You cannot honestly have me believe that.
Although, to be fair, it's for a small community. We were kids back then. So,
even to the big three in the, like, the early knots, we're still talking the big three: Naruto, Bleach, and One Piece.
Okay, yeah, true, but it didn't have that big of a crowd to say. Would you agree?
Like, I would highly disagree.
You know what? I could kind of see where Ryan is coming from. I also see where Nate is coming from, because yes, Attack on Titan, to a certain extent, was kind of like that catalyst to realize that anime can go mainstream. I think there's also the titles too as well in the pipeline. My Hero Academia was, I think, if anything, was even a better catalyst than Attack on Titan.
I think so too.
There's the hypothetical new big three. That I will not deny that they're the new big three. That I really hate saying that term, by the way, but, well, the new big three being My Hero, Demon Slayer, Jujutsu Kaisen, even the name Song.
No. There's, I wouldn't put My Hero kind of slacking, I'm not going to lie to you.
But in the very beginning, My Hero Academia was the hot shit. And probably did a lot more to the anime industry than what Attack on Titan did. Because it was something that both sides of the pond like. It was superheroes. And it worked. Mm-hmm. Well, and it was popular as hell. And if anything, more recently, I think Jujutsu Kaisen might be a better catalyst. Or Demon Slayer, or even Spy Family. That's more recent, because it's something that
I was gonna say this. Don't forget One Piece. They're supposed to be popular too. Like, but the problem was
the problem, like three yeah. times in this.
You mentioned one piece already, yeah.
But the problem is it wasn't popular because of that whole dub. Then it got picked up by Funimation, and Funimation started to actually get it from the rise up.
I already said that. Shut up.
I'm just trying to say I didn't hear one piece in this whole conversation that we're doing right now. Okay.
I already said that. Shut up.
Did you don't remember? I can hear you.
Oh my god.
You said main three. You said what was it?
One Piece was part of the big three.
Okay, then. Fine, whatever. At least we were able to bring that up. But how about Naruto? Wasn't Naruto also mentioned too?
Yes!
Oh my god.
Okay, good.
You stupid bastard!
Okay, hold on. Let's back it up really quick. The original big three was Naruto, Bleach, and One Piece. The new three when it comes to Shonen is Jujutsu Kaisen, Demon Slayer, and My Hero Academia.
Although, to be fair, One Piece is still popular.
Yes, like, it's still going through. It's part of the original Big Three Shonen.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. We had two different versions of Big Three, which is, like I've said, the original three, and then this new three that we're talking about, where we're hearing My Hero
Academia. But here's the thing. That's the thing. It's all Shonen anime. If anything, Shonen anime sells a lot more in the U.S. than it does in Japan, in a way. But it was those titles that really bring it back into the mainstream more than I would say Attack on Titan did. Yes, Attack on Titan was great for what it did for the American market. But again, I big disagree because I would say that My Hero Academia did a better job, or Demon Slayer did a better job.
But My Hero was way after the AOT, like. The AOT like uprising. You think about it, like we had so many animes out at the time. There was like Madoka Magica at the time. There was
SAO, the original.
Like SAO, yeah, SAO was big at the time. We had I'll even say Hetalia for its time was really big during that era. I mean, like we had a lot of First things first, Nate. I swear to God, cocaine is a hell of a drug for you.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
But in any case, as I was trying to say way earlier, before this got way out of hand, before apparently Nate is like sleepy Nate over here.
Yeah, I think I totally got misheard of here and there. I'm sorry about that, everybody.
But no, sleepy Nate over here, like as I was trying to say, is like no matter which generation you were a part of, whether it be like us Toonami and Deep Kids, us Four Kids, into the later like Adult Swim kids to the streaming kids, like everyone, no matter which generation you're a part of, there was one anime or another that was our gateway into anime. Whether it be that Sailor Moon, whether it be Gundam, whether it be Dragon Ball Z, whether it be the likes of Naruto, Bleach, One Piece, or even for the current generation, Demon Slayer, Jujutsu Kaisen, My Hero Academia. What's some other really big ones, guys? It's like kind of
Spy Family.
Kind of like Spy Family is another good one. Like all these good animes that are out now, there's one anime or another, depending on no matter what genre, what kind of type of anime you're into, even if you're just getting into it, there will be that one initial anime that gets you hooked.
Of course, I totally agree, Ryan, but when we're talking about the mainstream of America. Yes, Attack on Titan to a certain extent did bring anime to the mainstream of America, but My Hero Academia did a better job. Demon Slayer did a better job.
Can we say anything from the early days? I mean, God, I know we're feeling like old geezers here when it comes to anime, but like
I don't know if Naruto or Bleach back then did a better job than what My Hero Academia or Demon Slayer or Jujutsu Kaisen did.
Mainstream they were back then. Like, think of it.
But
like,
compared to like, now?
Naruto is still relevant today.
No. That's a good question.
Is Usher cosplay from Naruto?
Oh, come on. That's a low blow, man. That's a low blow. And you know it.
Have you seen the photo of Usher cosplay from Jujutsu Kaisen?
Yes, I know. That's what I'm saying. That's a complete low blow, and you know it.
Why is that a low blow?
Because you're using celebrity, like, relevance to say that, like, oh, well,
that's what I consider mainstream is when people had latch onto it because it's popular. Jujutsu Kaisen is that right now. Demon Slayer was that right now. Spy Family to a certain extent. Was Attack on Titan there? Yeah. But who did it better? Bigodemia and NBR. That's what I'm trying to say here. And I think this is a nuanced conversation that we could just go on and on and on and on about.
But you can't, like, I'm just saying, like, there are other animes prior to AOT that still hung out there and actually popularized anime in America outside, before it got to that major, major mainstream with streaming and so on and forth from that generation from 2011 onward. There are other animes that have done it. Actually, that was 2013 onward. I'm sorry.
I do want to apologize if this seemed like a discussion that kind of went in circles and was really, really disjointed. But that's kind of like the complexities of when it comes to something like anime marketing and, you know, why we can't get certain things in ICA versus Japan, because it's really multifaced. And you know, just because we don't get all the promotions, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're not being forgotten. It's just, it's a lot harder for them to do it. And as long as we still get the game, that's great. Do I really need a collaboration to go along with it? It'd be fantastic, but it's not going to, like, oh, just because Wendy's didn't do promotion with Persona 3 Reload, I'm not going to buy the game anymore.
You're totally influenced by it, man. Don't lie.
What, by Wendy's?
By the whole collab, and that if it was here, you would be buying into it.
Of course I would be buying into it. Duh.
I would too. I mean, I would definitely buy all that stuff. Hello, we're Persona fans.
So that is it for tonight's podcast. Next week, we'll finally be doing our 2020 recap and our 2024 predictions episode with Jericho here. And then I'm not sure where to go from there. I will probably make an announcement next week about what's going to happen about the schedule for the next couple of weeks. But in the meantime, thank you all for listening to this episode of Calicom Blogcast. If you like what you heard, you can follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Deezer, Player FM, or wherever you listen. ラストチャンスに植えたつま先が踊り出すままかけたこの夜空波のスタンスじゃ伸びかない星は宝石の憧れ浮かぶ涙と汗は血の名残目の中でしか泳げなきゃ芝居だけどステージが逃がさないいついつまでも憧れ焦がれているよ愛をかけてさあ星の子たちよよくお眠りなさい輝きは鈍らないあなたたちならばさあ星の子たちよよくお眠りなさい